This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Living Green. This is your host, Meredith Medland. Today, we're going to learn about the role that green plays in the world of media. Sitting right in front of me, right here in Mill Valley, California, is Michael Gosney.
I feel that the only way we're going to get out of the current paradigm, the system that we're all embedded in, is to create a new layer on top of the existing system. And I'm talking about new kinds of settlements, of human settlements, eco-cities, defining the term in a more radical way. You don't bulldoze and build streets and build 1,000 little homes or apartment buildings. Rather, you leave the land natural and you build a complex, multi-use structure. The encouraging news is the world is waking up, and it's waking up very much through the function of our mass media.
Michael Gosney is the co-founder of the Green Century Institute, which is devoted to sustainable communities. He's also a very well-known event producer in the transformative space, and has also been leading the edge with a proposed model for a radical Bay Area eco-city called Califia. We're going to learn about each of those things in today's show. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Meredith. It's great to be here.
So you're known for being a digital innovator. For those of people who don't know you, you've produced the first multimedia CD-ROM in 1991. You've also been producing the annual Digital Bee-In since 1989, which was the birthplace of cyber culture. And lastly, if that's not enough, you also have a conscious record label, and the artists that you bring onto your label promote sustainable culture through entertainment. So these are some great things. I want to know, what is the most invigorating thing that's happening with you right now?
Well, wow, that's quite a question. Well, there's so much going on, but I guess the most invigorating thing is the rising public awareness and the changing sentiments, you know, towards, you know, this overarching goal of building a sustainable culture. That's really what's, I think, pushing my buttons right now, just seeing the response of the public, the change in the political climate. People are starting to get real, you know, with what our situation is and what our definition of human reality, you know, can be versus what it is now.
Let's learn about that definition. So many of my guests have different opinions. So lay it out for me. How do you see the world and what's happening right now? And what's the direction that we're moving toward without intervention?
Well, you know, I mean, on one hand, I think we're all generally aware, people that are tuning into this show are probably pretty well informed about the statistics and the trends and what we're seeing about the human impact in the biosphere. Okay. But, you know, the encouraging news is, even though we're kind of, you know, we're 30 years late, and many people feel that we're almost really too late in coming to grips with the data and really understanding our relationship to the planet. The encouraging news is the world is waking up, and it's waking up very much through the function of our mass media, and more specifically, the democratization of media that's been going on since the early 90s. Not only the internet, which of course is in some ways a miraculous birth of a global mind, the manifestation perhaps in the early stage of what Teilhard de Chardin envisioned as the noosphere, the sphere of mind, you know, emerging out of the biosphere. I think that's what's happening. We have a global exterior collective brain emerging, and it's allowing us to communicate with each other, find each other, all the different affinity interests, and specifically the causes that are making a difference. And of course, the range of causes that people can now access thanks to the new media paradigm that's continuing to emerge, people can make a difference now. They can reach out, not only support different causes and join different groups that are having an impact, but they also can educate themselves and find access to new ways to finance their lifestyle and define their lifestyle. And this has to do with changing values, how you spend your money. We all have heard, maybe not all of us, but those of us who see some sense in looking at culture according to values and understanding that we and the mainstream American public have conflicting value systems existing simultaneously. And it's too bad I have to use the word conflicting, but in many cases, they seem to be that. The modern value system, as it's defined in Paul Ray's well-known book, The Cultural Creatives, says that to be a successful human implies the acquisition of things. It implies certain kinds of status in society, generally linked to financial or power scales. Cultural creatives find less value in that kind of definition of status. They find less value in the acquisition of things versus experience, for instance. And there's also the social conscious, the sphere of social consciousness and how much one responds to the needs of society and our culture's relationship with the environment.
Now, when you're talking about those things, I know that you're very well known for your philosophy about the role that the media plays in the green movement. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I suppose I am known for that. I basically, having been involved in the early genesis of the digital media world, specifically the tools for artists, with our early Verbum magazine, and then through the 90s, you know, I was involved in producing books on how to use digital media tools and so forth. But certainly, having been involved in the invention of the new media, I was always interested in putting my activities using new media into the green space. And having been involved with Paolo Soleri's Arcosanti project for many years, the Model EcoCity project in Arizona, and I held conferences out there called Paradox. What we learned and I encouraged through the late 90s was the value of the new media for these various nonprofit initiatives and also just for our overall knowledge gathering and understanding of the whole system of the planet. And that's really the thing that is, for me right now, my overarching mission, the meme that I'm most interested in promoting right now is the biomimicry approach to design, to not only technology design, but also other aspects of our culture and society.
When you say biomimicry, I know that word because that's one of the titles of the Digital Bean on April 21st. Isn't that right?
Well, that's right. We're the Digital Bean, which has been a cyberculture event over the years, originally held in January with Macworld Expo, and it was a tip of the hat to the Human Bean that occurred on January 14th, 1967 in San Francisco, and it became the Bean of the 90s. It was where the early inventors of the digital media revolution and the artists and the entrepreneurs and the journalists and the artists all got together, and over the years it became increasingly a public event and had Tim Leary and Alan Cohen and Chet Helms, the folks involved with the early BN, involved. And we had themes each year, such as freedom of speech on the internet, cultural diversity in cyberspace, and so forth. The last 2 years, the BN has been held on Earth Day. Digital BN 14 last year on April 22nd was called Planet Code. And that was really focusing on information technologies and the blogosphere and the importance of getting information out and, as I say, gathering our global knowledge and applying it basically in what the information systems allow us to do.
So let's go back to biomimicry. Tell us what that is.
Well, yeah, that's really the point. Sorry about being kind of long-winded here, but this year's Digital BN has a theme of biomimicry. So we've adopted Janine Benyus's concept of looking at nature as a mentor and a model, and a measure, as they say, three different ways of learning from nature. And the simple example is, if you're going to design a solar cell, reverse engineer a plant leaf, you know. But to me, the most important lesson to learn from the biomimicry methodology, looking at nature, looking to nature for solutions, is to think in terms of systems. And it really is very much a world of systems that we live in. And it's very important that we quickly, with the incredible emergence of a global sustainability movement and millions of dollars being poured into green tech right now, it's important that we don't continue to do what we've done in the early evolution of our use of technology, of high technology. We've been kind of thrashing around like Neanderthals playing with fire, not knowing quite how to use it. And we've been making mistakes that we didn't need to make. And we also, as a society, continue to have the problem of reinventing the wheel and not learning from our collective experiences, continuing to operate in isolated cells. And that's the importance of, again, of the media, is it allows us to see the big picture and learn from, as I say, from our collective experiences and collaborate more. We don't have room in the world of sustainable development and the technologies that will support this movement. We don't have room for conflicting standards. We don't have an extra 5 or 10 years for industries to work out their problems. And so there is a inherent conflict with capitalism and the systems approach that's essential for sustainable development. We have to have common standards. We have to work together. And it's on all levels. It's political. It's technology standards. It's economic systems.
I love the conversation of systems because I feel it relates precisely to living green and what it means to be living green. And each of our guests always has different things that they do in their life that are living green. Can you share some of them that you do, some of your cycles, some of your patterns?
Well, I must say that like a lot of people who are active in the broader sustainability movement, my personal lifestyle, my carbon footprint, my buying habits, they're not where my ideal is. I'm embedded in the same culture that we all are, and it's a challenge, but it's increasingly doable to modify one's buying patterns and one's lifestyle. I mean, I think a lot of the basic modifications in one's lifestyle, I kind of take for granted, you know, that I've made, but I'm not where I want to be. So my answer.
Where do you want to be?
Well, where I want to be is I want to be living in a sustainable community that I have contributed to and that can support the kind of values that I'd like to see in my whole systems approach to living. I'd like to live within my local ecology in a balanced way. And so I feel that the only way we're going to get out of the current paradigm, the system that we're all embedded in, is to create a new layer on top of the existing system. And I'm talking about new kinds of settlements, of human settlements, eco-cities, defining the term in a more radical way. And the only way that we're going to spark the development of a whole movement of this kind of development is to create some workable models. And so that's why I've dedicated my activity with the Green Century Institute to the development of a model eco-city, and we've called it, you know, Calafia is the name.
When we come back after the break, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about Calafia and have you explain it. And I'd also like you to spend a little more time before we go to break telling us about Arcosante in Arizona and let our listeners know what the website is, where they can go, and how they can find more information.
Great, yes. Arcosante, like it sounds, ARCOSANTI.org is the website. And Arcosante is a model arcology, which is a term that Paolo Soleri coined, and it means architecture ecology. It's looking at architecture and the development of the city and its integration with the surrounding ecosystem as the kind of unified design process. That's arcology. So Arcosante is a model arcology designed for 3,000 people, 3,000 to 5,000 people. There's only a few hundred there now, and the structures that exist, while they're very impressive, and it is a very active center out in Arizona, 60 miles north of Phoenix, Arcosante is only a fraction of its finished design, what's been completed. But nonetheless, it's been a very influential center for conveying these ideas of integrated green architecture, eco-city design, eco-village. You know, there's a whole movement around the world of eco-villages, and there's a trend towards designing eco-cities, although that term is still very much being defined. Meanwhile, you know, Paolo Soleri is kind of the purist. He's an incredible visionary, I must say. He's influenced by, on one hand, Teilhard de Chardin and his evolutionary philosophy, and on the other hand, he's very much an architect who worked at Taliesin with Frank Lloyd Wright and has taken a lot of his vision from the world of green architecture and those that went before him.
I encourage our listeners to go there, check out the website. We're going to take a short break to thank our sponsors. When we come back, we will be learning more about Calafia, which is the radical Bay Area eco-city that Michael is involved in. My name is Meredith Medland. I'm the host of Living Green, and we're with Michael Gosney. We'll be back right after this.
Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, Business and Marketing Strategies for Growth of Transformational Practices with Jason McLean, your guide in the 21st Century Marketplace on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. My name is Meredith Medland. You're listening to Living Green, and I'm talking to Michael Gosney, who is a transformative event producer as well as the co-founder of the Green Century Institute, which is devoted to sustainable communities. And before the break, we were speaking about Arco Sante, which is in Arizona, and I promised you we'd be talking about the radical Bay Area eco-city called Calafia after the break. But first, we want to give you a picture and a walkthrough of Arco Sante. Michael?
Oh, okay. Thanks, Meredith. Arco Sante is sitting on about 900 acres out in Arizona, in central Arizona, about 60 miles north of Phoenix, right off Highway 17 at Cortez Junction. And I encourage anyone who's interested in visiting to do so. Take a look at the website. And they're very accommodating to visitors there. And there's a lot to learn and experience at Arco Sante. And to just kind of paint a picture, it's a beautiful desert landscape. And the Arco Sante complex, and this is what arcology is all about, is you take 900 acres and you don't bulldoze and build streets and build 1,000 little homes or apartment buildings. Rather, you leave the land natural and you build a complex multi-use structure that houses residents and businesses. It's a mixed-use complex, and it has ecological design features in the meta-complex. And it also has carefully thought-out design features that encourage a very livable lifestyle. But the point is that you have access to the land. You, in an arcology, in an eco-city, you may give up what one feels to be the freedom of different buildings and driving back and forth in between open spaces to different structures for a megastructure that you live in, but this megastructure has features. It's not like a big box, like a big skyscraper. It's bringing air and light in and very spacious environments and communal kind of spaces and absolutely private dwellings. But everyone shares the access to the land, and the land is used in different ways. You can build an arcology, for instance, over a river, and the river is irrigating the land around the arcology, and it's turning turbines, generating electricity for the arcology, and so forth. It's an integrated design that's really integrated with the natural environment, and it depends on the natural environment as to the design features. But anyway, Arco Sante is sitting on a beautiful site, and the structures are kind of a science fiction hobbit environment, you might say, a lot of curved architecture. The buildings have been built out of a local material using Solari's unique silt casting technique. And what's there, and they're very beautiful structures, it's all been built by workshops, by students over 30 years. And so, you know, Arco Sante is a learning project. It's meant to be, as Solari early positioned it, an urban laboratory. And it has spawned many ideas. And there have been some efforts to provide larger funding and build the whole arcology model out there. And it's been stymied. These efforts to complete Arco Sante, so to speak, have been stymied for various reasons.
So one of the connections that I make is it has spawned a lot of great ideas. In fact, the proposed model that you have for the eco-city called Calafia is one of those ideas. And so rather than telling us where you're at now with it, what I'd like you to do is project forward into a year from now and describe a scenario of exactly where you'd like to be with it.
Well, a year from now, we'd like to be working with a site and developing, you know, architectural models of the project and talking with various partners and financiers of the project. but I, you know, perhaps should define the idea a little bit more, because, you know, I was just speaking about how difficult it's been to give Arcosanti a true, you know, solid financial development environment. I think that it's a consequence of where it is and the culture that is supporting it there outside of Phoenix. I don't think there's enough juice there, basically. I think the juice, and I found this when I was holding the Paradox conferences at Arcosanti, and you can search the Arcosanti site for the Paradox conference to see about those. But those were held in 97, 99, and 2001. And I learned in bringing speakers and attendees out there for these amazing visionary summit meetings that the Bay Area was really the center of the green universe in so many ways, and that this is really where I needed to concentrate my efforts more. And so that's why we started the Green Century Institute. Mark Caskey, who is the longtime director of Fort Mason Center and a real innovator in community developments. And Fort Mason Center is San Francisco's very successful conversion of a military base into a cultural center that's one of the real gems of San Francisco, actually. And so we started the Green Century Institute to encourage, to do research on and hold events and educate and so forth, all along the lines of sustainable communities, whether that means wholly new communities being developed, or perhaps more importantly, infill developments, as they call them, new developments within metropolitan areas. How to encourage, you know, not only sustainable design as it's currently defined, but a more radical look, more archaeological look at how to design our built environments. So anyway, so Calafia is a proposed model Bay Area eco-city that we feel can become the center of green tech, clean tech. That can be the business foundation, the industry support can come from this arena, which is the new wave of investment going into green tech that's coming out of Silicon Valley. And it's no longer a world of software demos at conferences. The demos for green tech products and services and systems will be built projects. And so I see Calafia as an opportunity to rally this industry behind a project that will have a green tech campus and be itself a huge demo of these new products and design methodologies.
And that model has been successful, because if we look at Intel's digital living room, they've brought that along many trade shows and done builds and houses. And this is a familiar concept that you would put together, not necessarily a whole city, but an environment for manufacturers to show their products.
Well, that's right. I think that's an interesting reference and a relevant one that people are used to when it comes to high-tech gear, tangible products versus software. Innovations are shown in a demo environment. And yes, the digital home is a built environment. And so we're just extrapolating from there when we're talking about new kinds of solar arrays and new kinds of power systems, hydrogen refilling stations for the community transport fleet, and these kinds of things. You're going to see large-scale demos.
Large-scale. Living Green is about illuminating the psychology of ecology. And so you're here with me, and I'd love to know more about what's happening with you on a daily basis as it relates to the choices that you make that are green.
Well, I think I, on a daily basis, undergo the same kind of underlying series of conflicts that anyone who comes into a broader awareness of how we're living in the world, and again, looking at things according to the whole system, all these products that we buy, these various energy expenditures, our carbon footprint, you know, we're all coming into awareness of our impact and our relationship with the biosphere, right? And so the more you come into that awareness, you realize the daily conflict you have in the culture that you're embedded in. And so my energy usage in my home, the materials that the products I buy are made of these things all in the, kind of in my subconscious, because you can't keep this stuff conscious all the time. I always have a kind of underlying feeling of conflict. So I would like my psychological state 5 years from now to have less underlying conflict. I'd like to know, and hopefully, thanks to the choices that are given me, I will have more choices to exercise the values that I know are fitting and not constantly be feeling I'm living in paradox.
So you're doing that by creating a community that can sustain you in that ecology and psychology process.
Well, yes. I mean, and, you know, we all make our contributions in different ways. And those who have already, and many of my young friends, it's amazing how they have modified their lifestyles so radically that they really are walking their talk in a way that I admire and wish that I could. But for me to participate in the mainstream culture to a level of doing these kind of meta projects, which is what I feel we really need juice on this meta level, how we build cities, how we build homes. That's the area that I think has been underestimated, the importance of it and the impact of cars and our car lifestyle. That's the area that I'm really dedicated to. I feel that's the big picture area that I can support and help. And so, you know, on a daily basis, it's maybe not I'm not doing as much as many of my friends and our listeners are doing.
We're going to take a short break here in just a moment. And when we come back, we're going to learn about the digital be-in that's on April 21st here in San Francisco. But before we go to the break, what I'd like to ask you is how you got into the green movement. Why do you care? There's so many other places to put your attention and your energy. What made that difference?
I was fortunate to be in an academic environment at the University of Kansas, of all places, back in the early 70s. And this is the, you know, 30 years ago plus when the data was all first coming out, right? Rachel Carson's book and the various sources of information were becoming popularized. But it was still a rarefied environment. The mainstream wasn't picking up on it. But I was fed the data back then. I had some professors, and I got involved in Arcosani early on in the early 70s. So I was really turned on early to what was going on, and I also ended up publishing a book. My first company was Avant Books. It was a small press, and I published a book called The Life and Adventures of John Muir in 1985, and that like changed my view of the world, seeing how John Muir saw the world. And then later went on with Michael Tobias to publish Deep Ecology, also right around that same time, actually. And Deep Ecology, that was where I really got my inspiration, was understanding what deep ecology meant. And so, yeah, from early on, I felt that the clock is ticking and we have to do something. And I have to admit, I feel like I haven't done enough. I kind of wish that I maybe early on would have been a little more devoted, because I think we're all conscious of, again, the ticking clock.
Ticking clock. Well, you certainly are devoted today. And when we come back after the break, we're going to learn about the biggest piece of that devotion that's coming up right on April 21st here in San Francisco. My name is Meredith Medland. I'm your host of Living Green. And I'm with Michael Gosney, who's the co-founder of the Green Century Institute, which is devoted to sustainable communities. And we're going to learn more about the digital be-in right after this. Thank you.
Listen to Living Dialogues, thought leaders in transforming ourselves and our global community, with Duncan Campbell, visionary conversationalist, bringing you the best in new paradigm thinking on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back from the break. My name is Meredith Medland, and I'm here with Michael Gosney, who's the co-founder of the Green Century Institute, devoted to sustainable communities. Michael, before the break, we were talking to you about how you got involved in the ecology movement, and you referenced when you learned what deep ecology meant, it made a difference to you. Tell us what it means.
Well, deep ecology just basically implies the human's position in nature as nature, not as something outside of the natural world. I mean, that's basically the simple definition of it. But, and it has come, by the way, to characterize a kind of a more radical arm of the ecology movement in some ways. But Arne Naess, who coined the term, and others who subscribed to the movement in Europe and the United States, basically were just putting forth the idea that we need to understand nature and act as nature would act. And I must say that, yes, deep ecology, I think, implies the biomimicry approach to, you know, technology and design. But yeah, that was a great influence on me back in the mid-80s, coming into contact with some of those real thinkers and visionaries that were seeing the trends. And
in 1989, that's when you started taking a lot of those visionaries and putting them together with the first digital be-in, right?
Well, yes, actually. Well, that's like, a few years later, around the same time, the early, digital media revolution was in the makings with the Macintosh computer and the desktop publishing technology and our magazine Verbum, which was out at the time, one of the first desktop published magazines, and it was for creative professionals. And so it carried the seeds of the kind of early cyberculture movement. And our digital be-in party held during Macworld Expo was kind of the real-time embodiment of that early industry and culture. And these were the artists, as I said earlier, and the programmers who were creating the tools for the creative applications, Adobe Illustrator, Macromedia's early director, which is the program for creating multimedia titles. All of this was going on back then. And so the visionaries that I was putting on stage at the BN were more the technology visionaries and, John Barlow and these kind of folks, Ted Nelson, who coined the term hypermedia and so forth.
So let's fast forward to April 21st here in San Francisco. Who's going to be at the digital BN? What's it going to be like and where is it going to be broadcast?
Okay, well, the digital BN is going to be held on April 21st, which is Earth Day Eve. And it's held in San Francisco here at a venue called Mezzanine. The information is at bn.com, be-in.com. That's the website for the digital BN. And it's produced by CyberSet and Green Century Institute. Also, the Urban Alliance for Sustainability here in San Francisco is supporting us in various ways, helping us with this event. And it is basically a combination of symposium and exposition and presentation, series of presentations going on, a lot of art installations, and music and dance. And it's an eight-hour happening, and it starts at 7 o'clock. We have the symposium, the biomimicry symposium, for 2 hours from 7 to 9. And we're very honored to have Janine Benyus giving us a keynote. She's going to be down in Costa Rica, but she's going to join us long distance and run her PowerPoints and give us a great overview of biomimicry. And then Paul Hawken, who many know as the author of Natural Capitalism, co-author, and one of our great philosophers, really, of the green movement. Paul's book, Blessed Unrest, is coming out in early May, and so we're going to be celebrating the release of that book, and he's going to speak. And we have a number of other distinguished speakers addressing the theme of biomimicry during this two-hour symposium. And we'll have a theatric performance piece about the extinction, species extinction, and a new film that's coming out on this. And a number of different initiatives are being launched at the event.
This is going to be really, really, really exciting. Thank you for this contribution. I want to remind our listeners that if you have any questions for me, you can email me at meredith@personallifemedia.com. And that's M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H at personallifemedia.com. And you've also probably found this podcast either through iTunes or looking at it on our episode page. And so if you look at Michael's picture and his bio, you'll see links below there. And so you can find out more about all the information that we spoke about today. Michael, I'd like to thank you and ask you just a few last questions here. If you could create three outcomes, specific measurable outcomes, real ones here, three outcomes within the next 3 months, what would they be?
Outcomes of my activities?
Anything that you can create, that you will create. If we sit here in 3 months and I interview you again and I say, hey, how's it going? What were three outcomes you created? And you'd come back and you'd say, I did this, this, and this. And they were things that you mentioned in this podcast today. What would they be?
Well, three outcomes. I would like to see the digital BN be a great success, and in particular, the media extensions. We're working with Earth TV and Second Life, and we have some exciting experiments going on. And so the idea that this event can reach a much broader audience and kind of evolve, I'd like to see a successful outcome with the media program, the event in general, and the media program. I guess I would also like to have a couple of radical steps forward for Calafia. I'm going to be reaching out to some of the leaders of the green tech investment community. And without naming names, if I could get one of these key individuals to the table at the Concord Naval Weapons Center, the city of Concord, and talk about building an eco-city on the former military base where they stored nuclear weapons and was a center of protest for years here in the Bay Area, that would be a wonderful outcome if I could move that forward. And I didn't mention that, but that was a exploratory discussion that we have going on with this incredible 5,000-acre naval base out there in Concord. And I guess the third outcome, I'd like to see some breakthroughs in the world of conscious entertainment. And whether that happens with some of our own artists and our activities with Cyberset or some of those other artists that are working in a similar space, I think that the world of art and entertainment has a lot more to offer the public. And I'd like to see some recognition for some of these artists who've really been working hard in this space.
Thank you. Well, the recognition starts right here. Michael Gosney, thank you so much for a lifetime of contribution to healing and sustaining and developing and waking up the planet.
Well, thanks so much, Meredith.
That brings us to the end of our show. Thank you for listening. For text and transcripts of this show and other shows on the Personal Life Media Network, please visit our website at personallifemedia.com. This is your host, Meredith Medland, illuminating the psychology of ecology for you right here on Living Green.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.